Richard Dewetting at the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the town. And, of course, our executive producer, research assistant is Laura Kortner. Our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw. There goes Adam Lambert. Time for miracles. Thank you, Adam. Well, friends, for the first hour and a half of tonight's show, we're talking about scientists who have explored the dimensions of consciousness. Our guest is Dr. Jean Millay, a pioneer in the field of parapsychology. Dr. Millay has published a new book, which is the collection of dozens of essays written by the leaders in the fields of consciousness exploration. Jean Millay has an education in art and studied photography with Ansel Adams. In 1969, she volunteered as a subject in Dr. Stanley Krippner's dream telepathy research, moving from there to studies involving biofeedback, including a demonstration of a brainwave biofeedback light sculpture at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She has been bringing her lessons in biofeedback and self-discovery to school children and college students ever since, while continuing her own education on creating computer images, shamanism, and remote viewing. She lives in a mile-high solar-powered retreat in northeastern California, where they're currently blanketed by snow. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Jean.
Hello.
How much snow you got, Jean?
It's only about 4 inches, actually.
That's nothing.
Snowing on and off all day and yesterday and evening. Of course, it's cold.
How cold you got there?
Well, I don't know. Cold enough for snow. We got a nice fire going here, and we're really very cozy.
Well, we're going to get cozier tonight. You know, this is an extraordinary work. I had, when you told me about this back in June, I thought, you know, this is going to be, you know, a couple hundred pages. But my heavens, we're moving towards 600 and some pages here, aren't we?
676, now, 76, yeah,
and,
right.
And it's not just there's lots of pages. There's an awful number, a great number of individuals that I highly regard. You know, Dean Brown lists the dimensions of parapsychological research as brought out in Radiant Minds, which, of course, is the book.
Yes.
What are just some of those dimensions that Dean Brown lists?
Well, Dean, as you know, passed away a few years ago, but he was a major teacher for all of us. He was a nuclear physicist. He was a computer expert. He initiated computer education for interactive way back in the, you know, in the 60s. And then he was a metaphysicist, and he translated Sanskrit. So I really had enormous respect for him as a teacher. And so when he wrote Cosmic Law, and then just before he passed away, he didn't publish it, but he did have the Foundation for Mind Being Research put the whole thing on their website. So anybody who wants to see Dean's whole Cosmic Law can go to www.fmbr for the Foundation for Mind Being Research, fmbr.org. and find the complete thing. Now, what Bill Goff did for us was to summarize it for the book. So, and we have the illustration how things go from very dense rocks up through and dense, and then more awareness and more awareness up to the higher realms of the absolute, and that we're all sort of in continuous relationship.
Well, some of the topics in this book, this is a very wide range of topics that I don't think many of our listeners realize just how many dimensions there are to parapsychological research, such as viewing and otherwise experiencing remotely in space-time, states of consciousness, thought forms, precognition, clairvoyance, telepathy, healing, deep sharing, channeling, causation states, and it goes on and on and on. I guess that's you should have had a 1,500-page book, dear, to cover all of these.
So actually, you know, I had started out with the Silver Threads, which is the one we did for the 25th anniversary for the Parapsychology Research Group.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in hard copy and cost too much, and, you know, people hardly saw it. So when I realized that that was totally out of stock and they wanted $135 for a book, that's when I decided, no, this information is too important.
Yeah.
We really need to have it cheap enough for students to find it and find it all in one place. And so as I wrote to each of the former authors and asked them if they wanted to participate or to revise it up, whether to add something new. And it grew. And pretty soon, you know, I have 55 people instead of 25 people. Mm-hmm. It just kept growing. I had no idea it was going to end up to be such a big one. But it had its own its own direction. And it grew, and I just let it grow the way it would. It represents, now this book represents 44 years of the Parapsychology Research Group.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they have now disbanded, and they no longer exist. So that's why it was important for me to put it together, because it's one thing to read about remote viewing and another thing to read about dream telepathy and spiritual healing and what happens in shamanism or altered states of consciousness or with meditation and biofeedback, but when you put it all together, you know, it makes a statement. And I really had the privilege and honor to be the editor of these 55 first-class creative thinkers. They did the work, they did the research, and what they did was establish the knowledge of the truth of the power of mind. And in doing so, they've set the stage for the most important transformation of Western scientific thought since Copernicus and Galileo, since they rearranged the thought that the sun goes around the earth, it's the other way around, and a lot of things changed.
Mm-hmm.
It took time, of course, to make those changes after 2,000 years of thinking it's one way. Well, ever since that time, then, there had to be, the separation of church. The church can talk about faith, and science has to talk about, you know, the so-called real world. But both of them labeled psychic activity, the church called it evil,
and
the scientific establishments in university said it was impossible, and anyone claiming to be a psi-sensitive was either just silly or certifiably sane, and then some of them then put in institutions and given drugs and stuff to slow them down. Well, those positions adopted by both church and science is a unacceptably limited concept of reality in both situations in the light of this body of research. So when the book is all together and you see how careful good science research has established that the mind is not limited, or it's not an epiphenomena of brain, it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mind creates. And, you know, one of the other problems that we face, our country is embroiled in dangerous political polarities, and these polarities arise out of either the church concept or the science concept. And they're trying to solve problems like healthcare and education without addressing the awareness of the power of mind itself. And, you know, it's been common knowledge for a long time among health practitioners that the placebo effect is so strong, a medicine can't be said to be a cure unless it works better than placebo.
Correct.
Well, what's a placebo? A placebo is a belief system that the body can be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point, which is an established science, we need to look at it in a wider way. And my own feeling, very dramatic, strong passion, is to teach science in a new way, starting by age 10, that's fifth grade, to begin with self-discovery science. And the book includes a whole section on this, and also there's more an extensive thing, at the Foundation for Mind Being Research on self-discovery science that people can download for free, just as they can Cosmic Law. But the technology of neurofeedback and biofeedback, they so allow the child to have a direct response to stress and to figure out how to change their reactions to it. And they can learn focus of attention, which is a big problem in education. They can learn how to learn. They can learn how to control ADHD without all those dangerous drugs. Now, you know, unless it's really extreme ADHD and there's a problem with the dopamine or something like that. But biofeedback can teach these things. Now, what do you think will happen if we actually change education instead of testing on multiple choice tests to see if they learn what's already known? Can they learn to deal with the changes in the world? Can they learn who they are and how they respond to their own thoughts and how they respond to other people's thoughts and how they're connected to each other electrically and how their brainwaves resonate with the frequency of the earth in the same frequency? All of these things can be learned, that we're all connected. There's no such thing as not being connected. So that's my idea of the book, putting all these wonderful people together and all that science together, is really to show us that we can solve health care if we can solve education. You teach kids how to be healthy, how to control stress, focus attention, and then what happens in about 10 years down the line, you know, the whole healthcare system is into energy medicine instead of pharmaceutical-controlled allopathic medicine.
But do you think that the corporate structures that own the pharmaceutical, their so-called cures, are going to sit around and watch this happen without trying to stop it?
Well, you see, the struggle we're in, it's not Democrat and Republican. It's not, whether some people should be rich and take care of the others or nobody take care of them and everybody's on their own or whatever those various arguments are all about. It's really not that. It's corporate control over democracy.
That's right.
That's the war we're in.
That's the war, right.
That, you know, includes billions of dollars for the drug war and putting people in prisons and cutting education. These are serious, serious things happening.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can't solve them by either Western materialist science or the church. They have to be solved by understanding that mind, consciousness is part of cosmic consciousness, whatever they want to call it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, understanding that we are that power. We can see and know things by remote viewing, things distant from us in space and time. We really ought to look at politicians more closely that way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that we really can, if we believe it, walk on fire without burning our feet. And we really can bend metal. I've been part of a spoon bending party a couple of times. And, you know, I actually bend a couple of spoons myself. It's a very strange feeling. When it happens, it just sort of turns like putty all of a sudden, and then you say, oh, I did it, and change your focus, and then it freezes up again. And we can do these things. We can focus our minds into a way to help healing, help healing each other and the planet. Focus light and begin to see ourselves as radiant energy beings in light. And from that, you know, from that light, how do we want to be in the world? How do we want to relate to the Earth? You know, the Earth frequency is called the Earth Ionosphere Waveguide. And there are several of them, but the most dominant one is between 7.4, 7.8 hertz or cycles per second. Now, your brainwave, if you're in the lower alpha rhythm or the upper theta rhythm, can resonate exactly with that frequency. Mm-hmm. So the Native American idea that you can go out into the nature and become the tree, become the earth, and allow, and in that state of silent, that is verbal, nonverbal resonance, pure frequency resonance, the earth will give you information. The plant will tell you what it needs to germinate. The tree will tell you what it needs. And these are fundamental things, fundamental knowledge that the Native Americans always had, and that we lose by overemphasis on reading and writing and teaching for testing reading and writing. Of course, we have to learn to read and write. But there are more and more students that I've encountered who are born without that capacity.
Indeed.
To learn to read.
We need to take our first break of the hour. But when we get back, you sent me some material on smart pills that just about knocked me off my chair. I could not believe this was going on and it's so advanced. I mean, so that really, and but also about the differences in the belief systems between 20th century materialism science and 21st concept, which I believe we're talking about here on multidimensional mind. So the main idea of the book is to bring together the separate disciplines to show the breadth of discussion and research that takes mind and consciousness beyond the material realm. And I applaud that a billion times. I would have voted for that 5 billion times. And I'm sure that there are some people in this country that voted many more times than that. We're going to we get into our final guest next hour. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Jean Millay, Radiant Minds. Scientists explore the dimensions of consciousness. Order it from the link on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890, thesellingwell.com. Researchers at Johns Hopkins are seeking volunteers with a diagnosis of cancer to participate in a scientific study of self-exploration brought about by psilocybin. Psilocybin is a psychoactive substance found naturally in mushrooms, which has been used for centuries as a sacrament for religious and spiritual purposes. Volunteers will be given careful preparation before receiving the psilocybin in a comfortable, supportive setting. Structured guidance both during and after the session will facilitate integration. This study complies with all FDA regulations. Please call 410-550-5990 or visit cancer-insight.org. Confidentiality will be maintained. That's 410-550-5990 or www.cancer-insight.org.
Hello, I'm Dean Radin, author of Entangled Minds, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Well, thank you, Brother Dean, and this is 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Dr. Jean Millay, Radiant Minds. What a name for a book. Isn't that a great name? Radiant Minds. Scientists explore the dimensions of consciousness. Order it from the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com. Now, before we really touch on smart pills, the differences between the belief systems of the 20th and 21st century sciences, dealing especially with multidimensional mind, are considerable. And we just began the 21st century, so we've got a way to go here, sweetheart. Can you tell us the differences between the belief systems of the 20th and 21st century researchers and scientists?
Sure. The idea that blood and bones and brain and neurons evolve and get big enough for thought to take place, for mind and personality to take place. And that mind is, and sure, if somebody has brain damage, sometimes, you know, they can't do as much or they can't see as much if they have eye problems and so on. And so the personality is somewhat affected that way. But here's the thing. Mind, in 21st century, mind is dominant because what we're seeing is that a person, for instance, who's having an operation and they leave the body and their consciousness is looking down at this unconscious person and they can describe everything that went on while they were out. Now, while they were so-called out of the body, all the electromagnetism quit. I mean, the brain waves stop and the heart rate stops and so on. And when the consciousness comes back into the body, then the electromagnetism starts up again. So there's obviously a relationship between the energy and what is, the personality. There is, now that is so not explained by 20th century science that it was pretty much ignored. And then one of our authors, Ken Ring, spent a lot of time, and he wrote a big article in the earlier book, on near-death experiences and what happens when people are declared dead and they still have these experiences. So suddenly there, and then after that there's a big organization set up to study these experiences, and they seem so strange to 20th century science because theoretically it doesn't exist. When I was teaching parapsychology in late 1970s, Carl Sagan decided that parapsychology is pseudoscience, and because of his reputation, as a space scientist, all classes in parapsychology were canceled with no public debate at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like burning the books or something.
Sure.
They were all canceled because he said that. Well, Carl, he was wrong. And part of the motivation, I mean, I was teaching at the time, and so, of course, my parapsychology class was canceled. What can you say? The time has come. Part of the motivation for this book, for being the president of the Parapsychology Research Group and bringing these people together and encouraging them to celebrate what we enjoyed with our open discussions and wonderful debates, encouraging creativity, encouraging the look at all this. When you've got Russell Targ and Charlie Tartan and Elizabeth Rauscher and Henry Dakin and Saul Paul Sarraut, you have all these people coming together to discuss it. It was a very exciting time in San Francisco. And it just, I felt really strongly about helping to put it together. And so Dean Brown and Beverly Kane and I put together that first book. And then Dean passed away and Bev was busy and I'm sitting up here being snowed in from time to time. And I thought, I just let that information go down. It's so important. It's so important not only what the individuals have done, but as a group. and making it available for the young students coming up who know that they've had psychic experiences, especially if they've been experimenting with certain mind-expanding chemicals.
Yeah, like psilocybin, which is right now being studied, as you heard, at Johns Hopkins.
Yes, I'm wonderful that it's finally being studied, but, you know, it's definitely a psychic enhancer besides a spiritual enhancer.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, it is. It is.
There are some things that, a lot of psychics don't need it, and certainly the government remote viewers don't need psychedelics, but I've found them very useful to myself over the years. And used carefully, and of course I've studied shamanism, and I've participated with different natives here and in South America, and extremely educational to show that. But there's also, then I took an interest in biofeedback because you can learn to synchronize, bring your brainwaves into phase coherence, which means you aren't talking to yourself. It's your meditation is, and from that phase coherence, then you can leave the body and travel in space and time, or channel energy in, or any of those things that, when going straight through the very center of your being, you can then focus your mind and the part of your brain that doesn't keep track of space and time, and you have access to it. I have guided hundreds of people into hypnotic states in order to find, the early childhood memories and so on, to release them. Mm-hmm. And the thing about biofeedback is that you learn, right, release your physiological reaction to an old memory. And see, this is important, too, for the guys coming back with PTSD. They have terrible memories. It's hard to even imagine how terrible those memories are.
Yes,
you have them burnt into your brain along with the adrenaline that goes with the situation. And so they're there. And somehow they have to deal with them. But biofeedback is a way to help them keep the memory without the body going into a twitch, without the, stomach getting an ulcer, without the blood pressure going higher. It's a way to keep the drama. You know, we watch dramas on the TV. Well, we sort of think of our own as a drama. It's much more serious with people like that. And in the book, Anne Shulgin, who has guided many people on MDMA, and I think that's Rick Doblin has now made it possible to use MDMA, that's called ecstasy, to work with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And because the person can have the memory and they can still accept themselves instead of, seeing themselves as a horrible person because they were involved with all that sort of killing.
Well, there's a lot of important research being done in that area now, especially with the work of Dr. Raymond Moody and the, I've forgotten the other doctor who was working with, apparitions, ghosts of those who were murdered by various, various military.
Yes.
Yeah, the Alan Butts, is that by Bodkin? Yes, is Dr. Bodkin has done some important work in that area, which I think would be a great help, and is a great help, but obviously there's a lot of prejudice against it, as usual, in this particular area.
Right.
So you would say in the 20th century and 21st century science are quite different in regards, especially to survival of consciousness after death.
Exactly.
Consciousness to 20th century science, especially mm-hmm. that was especially emphasized over the last 20 or 30 years or so at Johns Hopkins, was consciousness really wasn't, to many of them, didn't exist.
Didn't exist. You're dead, you're dead. And
yeah, that's it.
Talked to, different members of my family. Totally, don't do any ceremonies like that for me.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I'm gone, I'm gone, because it's not possible to have consciousness when the brain isn't functioning. But, of course, I've been a closet medium since I was a kid, and it had to be a closet in those days. Because of that, my grandmother used to tell me stories about going out when she was depressed and difficult times on the ranch in the desert, and being surrounded by her mother, by a golden light, and it gave her hope, and it gave her confidence to continue. Now, she couldn't tell that to anybody else in the family but me at that time. I mean, the men in the family just made fun of her.
Yes.
I could talk to my mother about some of these things, and when my grandfather died, he came to visit me. He had a heart attack out there in the ranch in Nevada, and I was in San Francisco, and all of a sudden I feel his presence in the room, and I put through a phone call, and I finally get through to the hospital in Reno, and the operator and my mother says, "How did you know to call just now?" And I really couldn't say Grandpa told me. You know, it wasn't the time to bring up that subject. And so any time that I would have those feelings, you know, there were some people I could talk to and some people I couldn't. And professors in psychology class, she just might as well keep her mouth shut.
Right. Well, you have to.
You have to get by, because when you don't get your degree and you don't get your, license or all that kind of stuff.
Don't get tenure. Now, that was your first major psychic event over 50 years ago that you wrote up in your psychic gifts from I've never seen this word here.
Entheogen.
Pardon me?
But that was, I didn't need an entheogen for that.
Entheogens, yes. No, you didn't use entheogens then. But that was your first major psychic event, and that happened over 50 years ago, as you said. No, it was a gift of love from Grandpa. And obviously, you had to protect your source.
Well, that's it. I always had to check my source if I get these impressions, you know, because you can be wrong, and you can, you know, create a situation just by, you know, getting emotional about it. So you stay unemotional and go back and check. But we were talking about the difference between 20th century and 21st century, and then the idea is, suppose, you know, the idea that there's only four dimensions of space-time. Well, take a box. You could measure that in three dimensions, and it exists over time. That would be four dimensions. But you really can't put a person in a box. You know, there has to be other dimensions. And Elizabeth Rauscher goes into that, and so does Saul-Paul Sirag in the book. They're both physicists talking about the dimensions of reality and of the physical world. The human condition is, I mean, what's different about a human in a box, you know? It has to do with life. So that when the physicists are talking about the four fundamental forces in the universe, and they have the weak and the strong nuclear force, and they have gravity, and they have electromagnetism, that one of our scientists questioned that, and he said, how come there are only four forces? There are really five forces. And the fifth one is consciousness of life.
Yes, and consciousness.
And in a room full of materialist physicists, the elephant in the room is their own consciousness.
Yes, that's right.
And the consciousness of life, I mean, I have to tell you a funny story. And we're talking about humans and human consciousness and so on and abilities that we have. But Daryl and I were sitting out on the swing one warm spring afternoon, and there was a stump there by the spring, and the flowers were growing around the stump. And the stump is about 2 feet high, I guess. And there was a flower. It was a lomation flower, actually, and it was about maybe 14 inches high. And there's a blue-bellied lizard, and he's sitting there on the cement, and there's a big fat fly that landed on that flower, and he's looking up. He can't jump that high. He's looking up, and he's looking up, and he's looking up, and pretty soon he runs around to the back of the stump. He climbs up the stump. He gets himself a little toes hung over the edge of that stump, and he judges the angle, and he makes a flying leap off that thing, and he catches that fly on the way down. Now, he had a think. From where he was sitting and he couldn't catch that, he had to be able to think to go around and climb up and check the angle from the top of that stump. Now, that's consciousness. That's consciousness at work.
Mm-hmm.
It's might be, you know, a little more limited, but the point is that the consciousness of life is in everything.
In everything.
In the ants.
Yes, yes. It's not
in
just
the
humans.
Bugs and the spiders and everything. And, of mm-hmm. course, Native American ideas is that, you know, we're all it, and the deer people and the bear people and the tree people. And like one time I went up to Meditante, which was when Rolling Thunder was still alive. and he's a human being, you know, but he was also an amazing shaman besides. You know, one doesn't become one or the other. They're a human being, and they learn, and they step into those places. Mm-hmm. And he did the morning meditation where everybody is gathered around the fire, and you throw, make an offering of tobacco to the fire. And he said, if you don't know how to pray, just say, to all my relatives. And then he would tell us who all our relatives are. You know, the father, the son, and the mother, the grandmother moon, and mother earth, and all the things that creep and fly and walk and crawl and so on. They're all our relatives. Since we all resonate in different frequencies, it's really clear that that's true. And for people who live in the city and get packaged food and fake food and toxins, and high fructose corn syrup that make them fat and then wonder why they're fat. You get a whole other corporation to try to study the problems of weight loss and millions of dollars. I mean, the whole health system is crazy.
Indeed, it is. As a matter of fact, it's a health system that actually, I think, moved people more towards becoming very large and obese because of the foods that were processed. Basically, I think most people in America still eat. I think there's a lot of excitement about going out to places like McDonald's, which certainly is the healthiest place in the world, right? Yes. Okay. Well, we need to take a break here, and when we come,
okay.
When we take a break here, when we get back, let's talk a little bit about Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Okay. In regards to, he was the first to receive a Ph.D. in parapsychology. And I'm going to ask you this question. You better study up on it. How many other Ph.D.s have there been? I heard you laughing there. In parapsychology since then. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Gene Millay. Radiant Minds. Scientists explore the dimensions of consciousness. Order it from the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com.
Hi, 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio... A legend in his lifetime has returned to the field. Dr. Jacques Vallée joins us to discuss wonders in the sky, unexplained aerial objects from antiquity to modern times. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBN. Oh, hey, I'm going to slip back into a former incarnation here, friends. It's time to take a look inside the prize library this hour, and there's the book. Radiant Minds, Scientists Explore the Dimensions of Consciousness, edited by Gene Millay, and courtesy of Gene Millay. You can order the book from the front page of 21st Century Radio. Now, that's only one of the books you're going to get. You're going to get at least 15 different other books and periodicals and a couple of punches in the nose, because generally most people deserve a couple of punches in the nose, but you're only going to get one or two, all right? We're not going to give you 100. So all you got to do is be the first correct caller to win by telling us the name of our first guest on 21st Century Radio just last week. You know, you can cheat at this, but we're not going to tell you how to cheat. You can, look, we're liberal enough to allow you to cheat any way you want. So, you can do that. But tell us the name of our first guest on 21st Century Radio last week. And if you're the first, and if you qualify, then you're going to be the winner. But here's how to qualify. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio, and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
Hello, this is Stanley Krippner. I'm professor of psychology at Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco on behalf of 21st Century Radio, run by Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And I would certainly encourage listeners to stay tuned, because you will hear things on 21st Century Radio that you'll hear nowhere else on the airwaves.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Now, there's several stories out there dealing with the major media, and there are actually some senators out there saying we should eliminate we should eliminate news programs altogether. That's kind of interesting. But you got to remember, friends, major media is a corporate structure which, since 1986, when General Electric was allowed to purchase NBC by Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, as a matter of fact, was an employee of General Electric. Most Americans don't put all this stuff together. And, of course, corporate structures like that and agribusiness, when you start hearing, especially on radio, and they're talking about food and they're talking about good food and problems with diabetes, unfortunately, they're not filling in the blanks there. They could, because what they're generally doing is pushing you into areas of food that are certainly going to create those kind of problems. Do you agree with me on that, Gene?
Clearly. Yeah, I'm 81. I've been around long enough eating different kinds of food, but I grew up in a ranch. We had real food. It was depression, you know. There were a lot of people who were hungry at that time. But our food was real. And one learns to read labels. If you do learn to read and write, you should read the labels of everything you've got. And if the label includes the whole periodic table of chemicals, you know, don't go. Because sooner or later, those toxins are going to be put into your fat structures or put into the organs of your body. And then someday, oh, gee, you know, I'm getting cancer. I wonder why. Or, gee, the pancreas doesn't work anymore, or the liver has to have whatever the liver has to have. Now, these are all expensive things, and, we have to say that modern medicine has learned how to do a lot of stuff that couldn't be done before. My nephew shattered his leg and his ankle, and, you know, they were able to put it back together. They're still trying to put it back together. In olden days, they'd have had to cut it off, probably. But if you need a good surgeon, why, that's great. But so much of medical costs are expensive pills, some of which are really dangerous. And they're giving more and more pills to high school students because they have stress-related illnesses. Or if they're attention deficient. Now, those things can be learned through biofeedback. A kid can learn to find out if he's acid or alkaline. If he's acid all the time, then, you know, not to be, and there's no question about his chances of getting sick or sooner. those kids can learn how to make those tests. That's a good biofeedback device. There's a little test strip to find out whether you're acid or alkaline. There are galvanic skin conductance response machines that tell you about your how your emotional reaction to things, whether you even remember them. They're deep in your memory. You know, all of that stuff is available, and kids need to learn it, and they need to learn it soon. They also need to learn biofeedback to find out the effect of all their electronic gadgets. You know, I learned early in my very early version of the first portable biofeedback machine that Tim Scully designed, I found that I couldn't practice alpha rhythms if I was sitting next to the refrigerator, because the refrigerator puts so much interference, 60-cycle hum, into the machine. So what's it doing to my head? You know, my head is still receptive. We were talking about 20th and 21st century, and it's specifically in learning biofeedback, neurofeedback, how you find out that the mind and personality is not just created by the brain, but how you affect your brain. And if you have a bit, you're having a big emotional reaction, and I learned this directly one time. I had a very, very long, really nasty phone call from my ex-husband, and I was really very angry. But I had the brainwave light sculpture, which Tim Scully and I had created, which put in different, instead of looking at an EEG record, which is a wiggly line, I'm looking at mandalas in different colors. And I could see that my anger was this red flash, first on one side of the brain and then the other, because I'm looking at both sides simultaneously. And I thought, well, if the theory works, the red flash was slow wave, high amplitude. And if the theory works, I should be able to make those coherent, and it would be different. It took me about an hour, but I practiced biofeedback until I was able to get those theta waves coherent. And it was a transcendental experience instead of just being really angry. Mm-hmm. And I realized finally that, you know, I was no longer afraid of them. And it made a major difference in my life, that I could turn anger into something as positive as, you know, as a transcendental experience. And I know that that's something that can be taught. So when you use your focus of attention, your intention to change your brain, then we're dealing with more in the power of mind. And this is 21st century thinking about what the mind can do instead of 20th century, that it can only respond.
Well,
and the other thing about that not only it isn't more dimensions, but that you carry your memories, you bring them with you from past lives. I have taken hundreds of people into past lives, and when they realize that some of the problems they have in this life are because they didn't resolve them in the past life.
Yes.
And then we resolve them in the past life, and their future is different. You're changing their future by changing their past, their reaction to the past. This is not something you can do if you don't think that there's any more to consciousness than what's inside your brain.
Well, Dr. Jeffrey Mishlow, who currently serves as Dean of Transformational Psychology at the University of Philosophical Research, has received the only PhD in parapsychology, and that was back 30 years ago. And one, I just would have expected that things would have gotten, well, would have exploded, and that we'd have many individuals involved in this. What has happened since then?
Well, you know, the press is on the side of Western science. He really had to fight to get that, even though he had done all the work. They still weren't going to give it to him. And he had to point out that somebody had been appointed to his committee deliberately to block it, so he got somebody else on his committee.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie Tart was his master teacher and helped him all, you know, get through with it. Jeffrey's a great guy. He wrote the book Roots of Consciousness. He wrote about Owens. I forget. A guy with a lot of PK ability and so on.
Well, we're going to have to take a break here for top of the hour. When we come back, we could finish with Jeffrey and then move on into conscious intention of spirit, which I think is really the key to this wonderful book, Radiant Minds. That is a terrific title. Scientists Explore the Dimensions of Consciousness, edited by Jean Millay, who is our guest into the next hour. And, of course, you can order it from the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore, and WCBM.com.
WCBM.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
A yoga-light meditation practice, first presented by the theosophist Jeffrey Hodson, is being offered at the Ruscomb Mansion. The purpose of the meditation is to align oneself with the spiritual self in each of us, and then with the divine self in all. First and third Thursdays at 7 p.m. in the meditation room at the Ruscomb Mansion, led by Cheryl Glenn Husk, one of the founding members of Savitria. Call 410-367-7300. For more information, send an email to wellness@ruscomb.org. That number again is 410-367-7300.
Hello, this is Ingo Swann, the author of Penetration, the Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And you're listening to the wonderful 21st Century Radio with the amazing Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney. The sky ain't blue. It's kind of yellow. You know it's true.
It's so hard to figure what it's all about.
Well, yes, indeed. There's no such thing as climate change. You don't have to worry about that. And that was our fourth tornado in Maryland this year. How many tornadoes do you have in Maryland, friends? Huh? 80 miles an hour, knocking down your house, knocking over your roofs. How long is it going to take for most people to realize we are deeply involved with climate change and it ain't going to change? Well, it's going to change an awful lot of things. Our guest on 21st Century Radio is Dr. Jean Millay. The book is Radiant Minds, Scientists Explore the Dimensions of Consciousness, and you can order it from the link on the front page at 21stCenturyRadio.com. And, of course, our executive producer, research assistant, Laura Cordner, and our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw. Now, we've been talking a little bit about, Jeffrey Michelow, who I have great admiration for. He received the first PhD. Now, there was a master's degree given out much later, I believe. Barbara Honecker, I know Barbara Honecker, received it. I don't remember the year. I guess it was somewhere in around 1980, 81. Is that right, hon? Jean?
It's about that. I have to
yeah,
put it up in the,
somewhere but, around. Yeah. But I kind of expected that after that 1980 period, that my heavens, wow, the new paradigm is moving in here. But it just seems that nothing happened, did it, from that perspective?
Well,
but a lot was happening.
Are those organizations now from even earlier, there's the, you know, the Institute of Noetic Sciences was established. The Institute for the Study of Subtle Energies and Energy Medicine, ICEME. and Charlie Tart was the president there. There's the Foundation for Mind-Being Research. And, of course, the Parapsychology Association has been around for a while. But more and more of these organizations have built up and are doing rather well because people really want to know about this and want to experience what they can do with their mind and where they can travel and what they can know of the world. It's the programs, and there's universities, Saybrook University, the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, the International Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, which was originally organized by Stan Groff. And these schools are there in order to help students who really want to learn. So it's not a, it's not that the University of California or major universities like that have ignored parapsychology, but there are other places to go. And I highly recommend Saybrook University. Stan Krippner has been the major psychology faculty there since the very beginning.
Yes, indeed.
And helped set the, the tone for the whole university when it was first a little school called Humanistic Psychology Institute. And Stan Krippner has spread the word for humanistic psychology around the world. He's very popular in other countries such as Brazil and so on.
Japan, etc.
It's now a university with three schools, and of course you know that one very well.
Indeed. I'm a graduate from there in 81.
Honorary degree there, and she's done such wonderful work. So the schools are there, and people who want to learn can go and learn. Now, none of those existed in 1972, or they were just, you know, barely thought of, still struggling for money and so on. But that outburst of information, and now we'll have to say, of course, there was an influence of psychedelics during that period. Willis Harmon, who is was one of the regents of the University of California when Jerry Brown was governor, he had the legal right to give LSD sessions to creative people, to professors, to leaders of industry, and so did Myron Stolaroff over at Stanford University. And from that, of course, that was all closed down eventually, but that was closed down, but the minds that were opened were not closed down, and they went on, and California became the center of creative innovation, not only in computers, you know, and the whole growth of interest in many, many forms. Some of our Nobel Prize winners admitted that they got their ideas from taking LSD.
Well, the reason why I brought this up with Mr. Jeffrey Mishlo is because of the comment by Arthur C. Clarke, which really surprised me. It really did. Arthur C. Clarke was asked, do you believe in ESP? And his stark and very blunt answer revealed that what I believe is to be a deep truth. He said, no, I do not, because I do not want anybody to read my mind. Now, we've corresponded with Arthur C. Clarke. He's got a very open mind, but the point I was trying to, when I was moving towards, was that they're really people, they're individuals, researchers, who really do fear psi from that perspective. And that could be one of the reasons why so many, why so many traditional institutions are going to take, it takes them a while before they can really begin to accept this, because I guess like as Thomas Kuhn said so long ago, with the paradigm change, that my gosh, you got to wait till the old guard dies out and then the new stuff comes in. Of course, when I was in college and high school, I didn't think that. I thought that you could easily change people's mind with with facts. But I was a little bit wrong on that one, because they have their own emotional investment in certain things.
Yes, but you're still working at it, you know.
Well, of course.
A wonderful thing to make it, the idea that we're more than than most teachers think we are. You know, mm-hmm. that we have, and this is for every child. I've taught school in places where the kids just really didn't have a clue, and there was nobody going to tell them. You know?
So have I. Yeah.
And those ghetto schools, other regular schools, they're all over the place. If the teachers don't know, and then they can suppress it in the child. The teachers themselves have to know that there's more inside, that there's more to learn about the nature and the dimensions of consciousness, the dimensions of perception of what you can see, and the dimensions mm-hmm. of intention, and what that can be, and the dimensions of spirit. You know, now that we've just lost Henry Dakin, he passed away, he helped make that whole scene of learning happen in San Francisco with his Washington Research Institute and funding computers for the Institute of Mimetic Sciences and, you know, making space available for the Parapsychology Research Group and for the Soviet American Exchange Program. I mean, a lot of this, the influence around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Dakin was right there and dominating and, you know, very, very, very special to all of us.
With Dr. Ruth Ng Hines, as you know, she had been in intense pain for years and had practiced mind over matter as a mantra. After she experienced death and left the body, she channeled something to you. Could you tell us what it was?
Well, yes. This was, she invited me to the first conference on shamanism that she herself sponsored. And I participated in most of them, either to do experiential things or to present a paper. And that went on, with the exception of 2 or 3 years when I was working in Silicon Valley. It was, 84 years. I mean, I'm sorry, the 24 years that she put on the conference, bringing shamans from all over the world. It was a wonderful event. And when I heard she was in the hospital, I jumped in the car and drove her Donner Pass and all the way down to Oakland, about 300 miles, to see her. And we talked. And, of course, her main interest in producing the conferences on shamanism was to teach the richness of the spirit life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you grow up thinking that you've got two choices, heaven or hell or maybe purgatory, you're kind of lost when you die. If you grow up thinking there is nothing after death, there's also that kind of lost feeling. But the spirit is, the life can be extremely rich. And so we discussed that, and I went on home, and then her fall had created a problem so that she could no longer speak. And they put her into some kind of a therapy center for Kaiser. And it was terrible for her. And she woke me up, at least 250 miles away or 300 miles away, in the early morning. I could hear her voice in my ear, I want to go home. And she couldn't speak, and she couldn't say that. So I called the ladies who were actually taking care of her while she was in the hospital and told them to get her out of there. And they eventually got her into a hospice situation where a private room, and we could send her the music, shamanic music and so on for the passing. And now I felt her very, very strongly. And so I sat at the computer and channeled. And whatever I heard in her voice, I put in one font. And then I'd miss things because I can't type that fast. I would put in another font what I was remembering that I'd heard and so on, so we could sort of keep track of what was direct and what was me. And the most important thing I think she's told me is that the process of, this was after she had left, the process of dying is predominantly the awareness of the relationship between radiance and density. Focus on the radiance, and the transition can be pure joy. And when she left the body and left the pain and left the heaviness, she was totally ecstatic. But she followed the awareness of the body when they prepared her and for cremation. Gail Hasten went there and watched for the whole cremation and participated with her. And then when she wanted to be scattered in the ocean, and you have to do it a mile or so out, so Gail's friend was teaching flying at a junior college in Santa Rosa, and so he arranged for the airplane, and they flew her over the ocean, sort of circled around the Buddha Center up there near Santa Rosa. And I'm up here still, you know, 300 miles away. And when they opened the box of ashes to scatter it, I could hear her say, whee, to be floating out of that body, out of that body of pain, to be floating freely like ashes into the ocean to become one with the ocean. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she experienced that, but she also continued to experience many things. And she also channeled many things to several of her of the participants in her conference.
Now, when she said radiance and density, with focus on radiance, to does that have anything to do with the title of your book?
Sure, because not overly consciously, but when you think of Dean Brown's cosmic law and his that illustration between the absolute and the higher energy beings and human and animal and plant and rock, all the way down to the density of rock, that we identify with the body, especially, you know, when it was a lot of pain, and she practiced a lot to be more into the radiance of mind rather than the density of body. But if you are, you know, if you're dying in a lot of pain, and this is, of course, one of the problems with the the PTSD soldiers coming back. If they identify with the pain and then they take it with them.
Yeah.
And I have been called upon to do a seance to speak to spirits who have died with a lot of pain and get them to release it. Mm-hmm. They don't have to take it with them. It's like when the spirit comes in to my awareness, I feel the pain that they're carrying. And we need to help the spirit who's carried the pain with them. The other thing that Ruth Inga channeled to me is that she was concerned that some of the soldiers coming back are possessed. They're either possessed by the enemy, mm-hmm. or for the one they reached out to try to save and couldn't. And that friend didn't want to be left alone there, and they brought it with them. Now, hardly any veterans' hospital are in a position to even admit that there's a problem with possession.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is there, and it's not with all of them. Of course, some of it is their own memories and of having to see all that violence. I mean, there was a time in history where, when Caesar killed a million Gauls, he's a hero because he killed so many. Hand-to-hand combat, that's that whole thing. But we're in a society now where, saving life, where they have anti-execution movements and people that they don't even want to kill a zygote, you know, for a woman who is in pain that can't carry a baby to term, and there's all this, oh, we have to save one. Well, what are they saving? But they go with that consciousness, awareness, over into the field of blood and death and hatred, and they're totally unprepared for it. They didn't come from a warrior class. And that makes our society really very schizophrenic in this matter.
Well, we had a story on the front page of the Sun paper today of a soldier who came back and who was had written a book and had dealt with his experience in Iraq. And there are certain passages within the book in which he basically comes out and says he really liked killing. I would say that this man is probably possessed. And just as you said, you could probably, there's no way in the world you're going to convince Veterans Administration that that's what's going on here. And yet he's very confused, and everyone else is very confused about it, but I think it has a lot more to do with possession than anything else. Loving to kill just because you were in the military is not, in my opinion, a very healthy thing.
Now, that could take a little more conversation here.
Well, unfortunately, we're almost out of time, sweetheart. I'm sorry about that, but we are. And is there anything, one last thing you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I just want very, very quickly. The person who is in the heat of battle and it's a kill or be killed situation, there's going to be a lot of adrenaline. That adrenaline can be thought of as fear or ecstatic. And this is one of the things why MDMA is useful for treatment in that situation, because the guy might come home and think there's some kind of a horrible monster because he did have a thrill when he won that particular battle. Mm-hmm. And it really has to do with the state of adrenaline and the moral issue could be discussed. And I think it's an important one.
Yes, it's certainly.
Bob, I love you. I love Zoe. You guys have done a great job for me, and I really appreciate the honor of being on your program.
Well, we're going to be seeing you again, I believe, probably next June.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Gene Millay, Radiant Minds. Great title. Scientists explore the dimensions of consciousness. And you can order it from the link on the front page, 21stCenturyRadio.com. And, of course, when we return, we're going to take a look. Well, Joe Honig is the founder of the consulting firm GMA International Limited, which specializes in national and international politics, business, and economics, with particular interest in China and Japan, will be joining us.